Welcome to the world of consciousness, human development, and full potential. Here we have conversations with people from all over the world about the subjects that matter for our mind, body, and soul, so that you can create a truly spectacular life. It is all about weaving the sacred, the soulful, and the ordinary into our everyday existence. Inhale, exhale, and let's begin. This is Timeless Teachings, a global podcast with Yana Frey. Today our guest is Seth Infinity Monk, who is a former Buddhist monk and he is currently living in Los Angeles. Seth is a healer, teacher, retreat leader who has worked with school systems and in the clinical mental health field. This dialogue is going to be about the state of the world we are living right now and what it means for all of us who are setting an intention to create a new world with truth, authenticity, choice, self-care, and nourishment. Seth, welcome to Timeless Teachings. It is a pleasure to have you here today with us.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And as we always say, before we start sharing the work and the message, it is always important to understand the person, which is you. So I would like to ask you to share a little bit about yourself. So who is Seth?
Who is Seth? Seth is very tired right now. Seth is a man who just had a long day of work and Malibu at a treatment center and then went for a swim in the ocean. Mm-hmm. And recently just got back to his home to rest for the night. Seth is somebody who is doing his best to be a positive force of change in the world while slowly learning how to take care of himself as well. And Seth runs on inspiration and vision, mm-hmm. but is also realizing that those are not always sustainable forces to run on. And so Seth is in the period of transitioning and learning how to balance and regulate and show up in a consistent way, even when he doesn't feel like he has anything in him to show up with.
This is such an honest, beautiful, and powerful sharing. Thank you so much.
Sure.
And I feel that, you know, people who are in that space, in the healing space, in the teaching space, can relate so much to what you said. Mm-hmm. That especially these days with what is happening in the world, everyone seems to be stretched physically, right, emotionally, energetically. And then when you also hold space for others, when do you hold space for yourself, actually? Right. And yeah, you and I just briefly talked about it before we started the recording. So, so Seth, I'm going to then put you right on spot with my first question about the self-care, since you and I had just spoken about it also before the recording. What is your current self-care routine and what you would like to add to it?
So my current self-care routine is really about finding ways to frame my daily life experience in a way that is uplifting and is forward leading and connecting really to what I feel is my purpose of being some sort of a channel for energy to come through to support, to heal, to help this world, to help the people around me. If I'm just kind of running through my day without setting an intention, it kind of just feels exhausting and maybe even overwhelming and almost confusing a little bit. But when I reconnect to something bigger than myself or something that feels really purposeful, it frames everything in a good way and it feels like it gives me energy. Mm. I feel that self-care for myself also really involves the basics, which we often overlook, which is just sleeping, eating, drinking water, But also spending time with myself, you know, spending time not connected to anything or anybody else's energies, being in nature, of course. You know, we are nature. We are made up of nature. So going into nature, it automatically starts to rebalance us, which is just an important thing to know. What I would love to include more, which I'm also starting to see, is my own limitations for taking care of myself because I'm giving so much. I actually do not have a day off for myself with my current schedule, that I am at a treatment center 4 to 5 days of the week, and then I am teaching meditation the other days. So I'm realizing that to be able to serve in the way that I want to serve, as fully as I want to be serving, I actually need to start paying people to take care of me. I've been getting acupuncture. I see that I need to do massage too as a part of my weekly kind of self-care. And then maybe, you know, I'm not sure about maybe finding a therapist or just finding some people to talk to. I have a lot of friends and I have my partner here, but I really feel that there are times where I want to kind of offload some stuff, and I don't necessarily have somebody directly in my field to do that with in certain moments. So really almost somebody just to help me process some of the mental and emotional things I'm going through. And you know, I do that anyway with the people I talk to, but I think eventually having someone who that's kind of their role in my life directly, it would be a nice thing just to have that set. So if something's happening in real time, I know that I'm going to have this person to sort it out with later. So yeah, really starting to rely more on others to support me while I'm supporting others, so to
Yes, I love this. This is really a great way to describe it. And I can personally also relate to everything that you have been sharing, because self-care routine has been on my mind for a while. And so I understand actually really well. You know, when the COVID started in 2020, I went like crazy with teaching schedule, not sleeping pretty much, because I felt that everyone was losing it and I had energy and capacity to support people. So I was teaching for 9 months straight, pretty much with no breaks, and I had a massive burnout. So, you know, we ran all those programs, and then I still remember on the January 1st, 2021, people were like, yeah, what is the next program? The next meditation? I couldn't get up from bed. I just opened my eyes and I was like, this is it. The battery is so low that I barely had energy to function myself. So actually what I eventually ended up doing is taking an entire year off. So I'm just now finishing my, what they call a spiritual sabbatical, which exactly finishes end of this month. And it has been a year. And I can say that at least for me, that was a massively healing journey, and also learning how to rebuild the energy. And it's what you said, you know, working also with a therapist, because it's important for people, I feel like us, who hold space for others. We need to hold space for ourselves. And sometimes it's easier when there's another professional in the room who gives you very kind of honest, unfiltered view on things, who is not a friend or relative. And it's just a different level of support. So I understand. And I appreciate you showing up today. I know you had a long day and you still made time for us. So thank you for that.
Sure. Yeah.
Okay. You giving soul. So thank you for that. Taking basically 1 hour away from your rest and sleep. So we appreciate it.
Yeah. I spoke with a friend yesterday, and I've been speaking to a couple different people in my life, and a few of them, knowing my situation, you know, said, well, you got to quit one of the places you're teaching. You got to reclaim your time. But I talked to a friend yesterday and she said, it's not about quitting or letting go of the things you're doing. It's about learning how to expand and to really put the focus there. It's how can I expand myself to be able to hold these things? What does expansion look like? Because it would be easy to quit one or two of the gigs and have more time and energy for myself, but I want to grow. I want to get bigger. Mm-hmm. I want to support and hold this space. And, you know, when you're lifting weights, you kind of need to get the bigger weight, you know, after you've, you know, and then you need the bigger weight after that, and you have to keep building up. So I feel that I'm in a difficult spot. I'm in a growth spot, and I'm teetering on the edge of not being able to hold it together, but I am still holding it together for now. So it's kind of this experiment in endurance, and it's an experiment in how much I can really hold, and can I find a way to open, to be able to hold more, to grow more, because that's really what I want, you know, and a lot of the people I look up to, they are kind of going all day and they do a lot of projects and they're really out there. And, you know, I'm aspiring to reach those levels, and we'll see. It might be a total failure and this whole thing might collapse on itself and I'll be like, well, that didn't work. Okay. I guess I have to go a lot slower. And I'm open to that. There's no shame in failing, or something not working out and having to pivot and try again. Mm-hmm. But, you know, where you find me in this moment, is in that process of on the brink of burnout and saying, okay, like, what can I do with this that doesn't involve me having to step back from the work? What can I do with this that allows me to be able to hold more? And it's a fascinating question, and you know, I don't yet have the answers. Maybe people at home, you know, have some of the answers that I'm looking for. So
you'll have to ask, you know, guys and girls who are listening, and absolutely let us know. Write to us. Let them in comments. What do you do? What are your tips? Right? What have you experienced? And I think, especially if you're a teacher and who is holding space, and you're really able to do it consistently, and maybe you figure out how to do that. So please share with us. I think we can all learn. And Seth, as he said, I also feel that, especially for teachers, it's a big question, because then when you're in this space helping others, it's inevitably the more you do this, the more people you want to help. And then, sure, like, it's one of my teachers used to say that, okay, the spirit is infinite, but mm-hmm. the body is not. Right. And sometimes people forget about it. And so it's what you said at the very beginning, the very basic stuff, like sleeping enough, drinking enough water, eating food which is good for you, like resting enough. It is just actually really, really important. And, you know, at least for me, like in my experience, because I feel I went exactly through what I feel in your description you're going right now, like just a year ago. And I was reflecting on it for a year, like how to do it differently, like how can I do that, right, without sacrificing everything about myself. And at least what I figured out for myself, if I may share with you, mm-hmm. that, yes, you know, there are like a few things that now I'm very particular about. So one is my personal self-care routine for my physical body, because I know my body needs care. It's what you said. You know, maybe enough massage or just enough rest and just maybe walking like in nature. So your physical body stretched might, for me, also get stretched. So I know that the body needs to be rested. This is very important. And then in terms of just working with people and leading projects, now I agree only to those projects where there is a team of people who are willing to consistently show up and okay to take lead from time to time, at least. So it's not all on me all the time, right? So, and that's why maybe earlier I would just jump sooner into something. Now I really take it slowly. I'm like, who is doing it? How long they have been doing it? How committed are they to doing it? And how can they show up consistently in doing that? And if I see that everything is there, then it's like a step-by-step process. Okay, let's try. Let's try and see, you know, how much energy and time I need to invest. And if people showing up from their side, then it just becomes much easier. Otherwise, I don't think it's sustainable. And also, like, when I look at other teachers, like what you said, because I'm also was analyzing it and researching it, right? So people who just do a lot for others, they usually have great support system. So it's either students often who just help, volunteers, or it is maybe something with friends, or they open and know a business and they hire people. So everyone kind of does it in a different way or combination of things. But I feel absolutely we all need support. Otherwise, it is not possible, you know. Right. And even with projects now, like my friends know, that's why I guess now I start receiving also projects which are more aligned. I'm not sure how you feel, but I have been feeling for years where the nourishment was going one way when I was the one who was nourishing other people. And that's why I was the one who was depleted. And I was like, this is just not correct. It shouldn't be like this. And, but it was in my mind, right, for me. And so then eventually one day I just told my friends that, you know what, on top of everything else, I want to be involved in the project when I feel being equally nourished with what they do. And nourishment can come in many ways and forms, right? And so I feel it now, people that are kind of approaching and coming with projects, so they're all very nourishing by nature. So it becomes a very different just energy, and it is much easier. So I'm...
And what about money? Because I feel like that's usually the nourishment exchange, right? Is that we give our time and our energy and our care. And we get money as the return. So is that, would you say that that's nourishment enough?
It's part of that. I personally think money is not nourishing enough. Like I think that money absolutely have to be there for teachers. And especially in this kind of, you know, well-being, personal development, human development, spirituality industry, there are way too many people I feel who just kind of giving their services because someone is suffering, which is a very tricky one, right? I mean, like if you don't have, you know, money to buy food or roof over your head and you still give everything what you have. And for you, I think it's even trickier because on your social media, you have Seth Monk, right? So which is, that's my also other question for you. And I mean, if we speak about monkhood, and I think also how monks are trained, and I know quite a few, and I spent enough time, you know, in Tibetan monasteries with monks. I lived with them and I studied with them. So I also understand the way of thinking, right? So it's a lot, for, especially for monks, where you pretty much sacrifice everything about yourself and you give it for the benefit of all other living beings. Right. And that's a big part of their practice. People who literally renounced everything in the society and went officially to live at the monasteries. That's a big part of their practice. And that's why I'm also curious to hear about you, because in my experience, what I found when I spent time there studying with them, that it is not entirely transferable to the real society. You know, it doesn't work. So it works only in a very specific context for people who choose this very specific life. And in this very specific structure where the monastery takes care of the expenses, or people know you have to donate money actually to someone who wears particular clothes. It's like a psychological thing, right? But then I know a few other people who come from a like a more traditional kind of monk life, but they decided to become more what is called yogis. So it means they went back into society and they wear normal clothes and they live, you know, a normal life. And sometimes they get married and kind of their life in the society becomes their practice. And they really often struggle with money for this particular reason. Because then once you look like everyone else, it's very hard to explain to people why they should just be giving your money, how they do to the monks. Do you know what I mean? And you can go on and on how, you know, many years you spent in the monastery, and you might have all the wisdom and all the knowledge, but just in the mind of the society, it doesn't work. And so to me, I also was reflecting on that for a long time, you know, how to do this. And I feel that, like if we choose to live here, like if we choose to live in the society where money still is a very big part, then it's about just doing business in a conscious way. You know, and then it's just doing it in the right way, in the most authentic way. And that's also maybe teaching other people how to do this in the authentic way. And then the more, I actually feel the more practitioners go into conscious business then the more we change the structure from inside, and then everyone else just start doing better. Does it make sense?
Sure. Yeah. Yeah. I think that's kind of the way that I'm looking at it as well. I was a monk. I was a Buddhist monk for 8 years, living in a monastery and just giving myself every day, all day, for the good of others. And, you know, built into the Buddhist social structure, there is this reciprocation where the lay people, the supporters, the community, they bring food or money if mm-hmm. needed to the monastery to support the monks in their practice. And as the reciprocation, the monks give their wisdom, right? Or their training or the things they're seeing. So it's kind of like, you know, in nature, it's like you see sometimes these reciprocal relationships between like a fish and a plant or something, right?
Yes.
The symbiosis. Mm-hmm. And so it's a symbiotic relationship where everyone's winning and everyone's giving the thing they have to give, right? The people that are creating physical resources give the physicality to the monks, and the monks who are creating spiritual resources give the spiritual resources to the people.
And that is actually a very important one. I just would like also to maybe explain a bit more to people, just in case if someone doesn't know it. But I feel particularly in the Buddhist culture, right? So when so-called lay people support the monk in meditation, then technically the realization, the spiritual benefits are equal. So everything what monk actually realizes through the practice, on in a spiritual terms, and this is how my teacher was telling me and in the monastery when I was, you know, spending time and studying, that people who are bringing money and who are bringing goods, who are bringing material, even though they might not be practicing themselves and they engaged in activities like raising children or building business or doing something else, because they are supporting practitioners, in a spiritual terms, they are receiving equal benefits spiritually. Mm. That's the relationship also, what I feel you're describing.
Yeah. Yeah, there's definitely karma involved. You know, if you are giving resources to somebody who is on the path of cultivation and of growth, then you're directly supporting that growth, and your energy stream is directly plugged into this transformational energy stream of growth and transformation. You know, it's like you're the roots of the plant, and you're bringing the resources in for the plant to then bloom. So you know, the idea of dana, if you go into the yogic traditions, it's called seva, similar but different, right? This idea of service, or this idea of generosity or of giving, as this foundational element of the path, because it allows us to connect into these energy streams. It allows us to become part of something bigger than ourselves, moving in a good direction. And there's a selflessness to it as well. As we give things, we're giving away, we're letting go, we're releasing, and doing so in a good way, in an intentional way, in a way where there's almost ceremony involved. Oh, little
puppy. Your doggy. We love doggies. I have a doggy too.
Yeah, so maybe I'll close this door really quick. Okay. So, you know, it's really considered part of the path to begin actually the path with giving. In Buddhism, we don't start with meditation. Mm. Meditation is not the beginning of things. Meditation comes later. That the way that we actually start the path of practice is by serving. It's by giving. It's by creating beneficial and virtuous and uplifted behaviors that start training us to be good people, that you're not going to be able to work with the mind if you haven't yet worked with the body, because the mind is much more subtle than the body. So if your body is still engaging in impulsive actions, if you're living and doing things that are hurtful to others or yourself, if your body is not under your control, it's going to be very hard to control the mind. But once we start controlling our actions and our physical behaviors, we start slowly reining ourselves in. We start creating more of a container. And it starts to almost like a fire building under a cauldron, right? And then slowly the water starts heating up and bubbling. You know, it's kind of, we're starting to really collect our energy and our resources by being aware and being more in control of our actions and our behaviors physically. And that's the precursor to meditating, because if your actions throughout the day leave you feeling accomplished, if you feel good, if you feel that you've helped people, if you feel virtuous, if nothing that you've done all day or said all day makes you feel guilty or ashamed or restless or in conflict, if your way of being is in harmony, if your way of being is harmonious, the mind then is already becoming primed to just begin meditating. You become comfortable in yourself, in your own skin. You feel happy with yourself, with your life. And then when you start to meditate, it just takes off because you've created this really beautiful foundation for it. And that's something that, you know, unfortunately in the West, as meditation's come over, it's really come over kind of like in a vacuum. It's come over just as this practice where you just sit and you follow your breath, right? Or you just sit and you relax, you do a thing. And it's missing all of these other elements in this whole understanding and the whole context of meditation. And, you know, if you're yelling at your partner or your kids and you're, you know, walking around and your house is a mess and you're just not taking care of anything around you and you're, you know, hurting people, and then you sit down to meditate, it's not going to work. Your mind is not going to be at peace because you've spent all day stirring it up. So there's something that I see a lot of, which is we talk about like spiritual bypassing.
Or
spiritual ego and things like this. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if you take any monk, right? When I saw monks that were really masters, like meditation masters, they're super wise. They just have all of this to give. And I look at their lives, they're always very disciplined. They always know, they're very precise with their words. They're very precise with their energy, their time. They're precise with their actions. They always have this kind of like orderly neatness to them in some way that you have a feeling that they've really kind of reined themselves in energetically and have this container of their energy, which then they can channel into their spiritual path. And, you know, when I meet people in my daily life, a lot of spiritual people or teachers or things like this, right? I love seeing what people do and I love receiving people's work and all this, but I'm always curious to look around the corner and look behind that and say, well, what does your life look like? Like, what does your bedroom look like? You know, what are your relationships with people like? How do those who have spent a lot of intimate time with you talk about you? You know, really seeing, is this a full energy? Is this a full being? Because, you know, in the age of Instagram and Facebook and all this, and I mean, this has been going on forever, of course, but, you know, we understand the principle of pushing a presentation of ourselves to the front, you know, how we want to be seen. And as a monk, it was difficult because I'm wearing this robe, I have the shaved head. So I am in form, I am embodying, wearing the costume and everything of this like spiritual or holy person. And people would respond to that in that way as well. And there were times where it almost disgusted me. There are times where I even questioned, being a monk at all, because mm-hmm. it almost seemed counter, you know, it's like I became a monk to be free of needing to play some role for anybody and needing
to have like the biggest role, the monk.
And only once I did it, I was like, oh, I've literally become like an archetype that has all of this baggage already with it and all these expectations. And, you know, if I get upset, people, I thought monks didn't get angry. Right. And it's like, and it's kind of like, God, like, I that's part of actually why I disrobed from being a monk, because I was like, I don't want to wear a costume anymore. I don't need a thing to tell me how to be or what to be or something that people are reflecting back to me. I was there for 8 years. So eventually I just reached a point where I really felt that I had what I needed inside and that the world would be enough of a teacher for me mm-hmm. outside of that. And I had already embodied what I needed to embody. And now it's just about living life and doing the thing and figuring it out, you know, and there's times where that makes more sense and times where that makes less sense. But you know, we're a bunch of sloppy, messy humans all just learning together in this incarnation and we mess up a lot and that's okay. That's part of it. But the whole process, it's really almost about being humble, I guess would be the word. Is really being honest with where you're at. And it was actually funny, even just as we started this interview, I was thinking that this is probably the first time that I've gone on an interview and started with saying, here's the things that I don't know how to do yet. You know, usually it's like, Seth knows this and this and this.
I appreciate your honesty. You know? Look at you. Yeah. You're even more authentic today.
Yeah. You know, usually it's about presenting all the things we know. So everyone listening at home can get these things that we know. But it actually feels really good to come on and say, actually, like, here's the things that I'm struggling with. And it's actually great. You as the host, who's usually the space holder, you're having all this information coming through. I'm almost like, wow, I feel like I'm interviewing you a little bit too, you know, which is
I felt
cool.
That, yes.
Yeah. So yeah, I'm a big fan of just being, I appreciate humbleness and authenticity and I know the truth. I've been behind the scenes in the spiritual world. I've been with some of the greatest masters on earth. I've been in ashrams. I spent 2 years in India. I've been, you know, I've done a lot. And darkness is everywhere. Confusion is everywhere. People are people. People are broken everywhere. Everyone's got their blind spots. Everyone needs help. And nobody has all the answers and nobody is perfect. And, you know, Thich Nhat Hanh, before he passed away, he said he thinks that the next Buddha is not a person, it's a community.
Mm-hmm.
And that makes a lot of sense to me, because I feel that everybody that I meet is holding their own individual wisdom, that everybody is holding wisdom that they have gathered from their lifetime, from the things they've experienced and learned. Every single person you meet has a unique wisdom that they can share with you. And simultaneously, everyone you meet has something that you can share with them, you know, and we all need each other and we're all here to support each other. And we're all kind of like eyes, you know, in this river together, where we all see different aspects of things and we're all blind to some things as well. And it's really great to be able to acknowledge both of those things for ourselves, to say, hey, here's the things that I'm struggling with. Here's the things I'm working on. Here's the things that I really suck at. And then also, here's the things that I'm a master at. Here's the things that I really learned and studied. Here's the things that I can teach. And if there's anybody in your life, and this is for everybody at home, if there's anybody in your life that you really hold on a pedestal or that you really think is perfect, I encourage you to look deeper, to try out some different eyes and angles. And simultaneously, if there's anybody in your life that you really just think is a horrible human being, also, I invite you to look at some other angles. You know, our our perception leaves out more information than it takes in. Alan Watts said this, our everyday ordinary consciousness leaves out more than it takes in, that there's so much information in each moment and we're only receiving such a small amount of it. And we're building our whole reality, all of our stories out of just such a small sliver of potential information filtered through our imperfect senses, through our eyes and our ears, through our minds, who are so conditioned and so tight and so one way in their perception and way of being and understanding. And we have to continually remind ourselves that we don't know and that we only see such a small amount. And we have to continually be open to the possibility that we are completely wrong about everything. And I have found that is one of the best spiritual tools that I can give somebody, is to continually question yourself, to continually allow everything you think you know to be wrong, while still standing for it, while still sharing and saying, this is my truth. And I'm completely open to a new piece of information coming in. And I realize that my entire world has to crumble and come back together in a new way once I get new information. And that way we stay in the flow and we stay alive, you know, and we stay out of dogma and we stay out of stagnation, that we allow ourselves to be in the flow of life and not feel like we need to protect ourselves, protect the ego, the spiritual ego, protect this thing that we've built or that we're creating or that we're presenting. We have to allow ourselves to just be annihilated again and again and again and again and again and again, and let it keep reforming as it needs to. And that's called being honest. You know, that's really called being honest, because nobody has it together. Nobody has all the answers. Nobody's figured it out. And that's okay, right? Letting it be okay that we're all figuring it out together in real time.
That has been already such a beautiful flow. I didn't want to interrupt a single word. You were just, you know, it was just coming and coming. I'm like, okay, let it fully share what it wants to share. So thank you for that, Seth. And I just would like to ask the next question, if that's okay with you.
Yeah, of course.
Because you're the person who kind of has an experience of both worlds, and yeah, I think it's important to talk about it. And I just would like to hear your perspective and your understanding, right? Sure. So you spent so many years in a traditional teaching and traditional school in a kind of, and that's, to me, when we look at spirituality, there are traditional schools and there are what is called New Age schools, right? Those are kind of two major directions how people go. And so you're kind of the one who has been in a traditional kind of space for many years, and you learned what you needed to learn. And then you came back into society, and now you are teaching. And I am assuming you're probably also interacting a lot with teachers from the New Age community, maybe collaborating, doing things. Yeah. And so what is your, how do you see that? What is your understanding of it? How did it work together? Did it work together at all?
Sure. Yeah, I think that they're both necessary. That if we just stick with lineages and traditions and teacher to student, teacher to student, teacher to student chains of passing information, if you just stick to that, we are not going to be open to new information coming in. And we are not going to be open to other ways and other understandings. We're going to be limiting ourselves. If we, however, go strictly into, you know, that everybody is enlightened or everyone has the information, or we can just receive it from whatever, there's just a lot of real beautiful, just basic fundamental teachings that are gone, you know, and that will be hard to find again. I really, I have dear friends in both places. I have dear friends who are very strict in their lineages, and this is how things are, and this is the truth, and this is, you know, and I really value the information that they share because it has been information that has proven itself to be valuable over thousands of years. You know, can't deny it. This is good stuff. And I have friends that have never followed a traditional school that receive their messages from their guides or their angels or from the ocean or from a book or whatever. And they sometimes have just the most brilliant insights and reflections and an ability to see things in such a fresh and clear way. And so I would encourage both. I would encourage us to be open to receive all information that's possible. Some of that information will be in teaching and in book form. Some of that is literally just sitting in the air around our heads, just waiting for us to open up so it can come through. I love it all. And I do believe that moving forward, I mean, you know, out of all of the monasteries I visited and out of all the ashrams I visited, I really only found just such a small amount of just real genuine practitioners that were really just doing it. There's just so much garbage out there. And honestly, a lot of monasteries are filled with people running from life, and a lot of monasteries are filled with unhealthy interpersonal dynamics and trauma and abuse and kind of toxicity would be the only way to describe it. And I mean, like, most of them.
Yeah.
And I say this honestly.
Even in my experience.
Most of them. Yeah. And spiritual communities in general, most of them. And I really mean that, most of them that I've encountered. And so, you know.
On both sides, on a traditional side and on the new age side.
On
both sides. Yeah.
So the point is that people are going to people. Yeah. People are going to be people, whatever they're doing. You know, my encouragement is always just to be open and to look for the answers wherever they may come, and to follow your heart, follow your way. There's no right way. If you resonate more with Sufism or Buddhism or Islam or whatever, then do that thing, you know. And if you want to go real traditional fundamentalist dogmatic stuff and that feels right to you, do it. Cool. Hold that vibration. You know, and if you want to go completely the other way and you want to just, you know, go and do ayahuasca down in Peru, and then you want to kind of come and just like lay in the sun and just do, you know, receive the messages and the light codes, and amazing, do that. You know, it's all good and it's all needed. And the only thing that bothers me is when anybody feels like their way is the way. And that's actually one of the things that's been bothering me with our current political climate here in the US. You know, there's just a...
Well, you guys also had this new rule right now for women, right? It just hit the news, which is quite shocking.
Yeah, and I'd love just to say something briefly on that.
Yeah, because it's an important message, of course.
For sure. And, you know, the fact is that, you know, abortions were protected by our Supreme Court, and they just passed a ruling now that said that they're not protected and states can decide, and the whole kind of the two schools in America, it's called pro-choice and pro-life, right? Which so there's one side saying, you know, we believe in choice, that people get to choose, and then the other side says we believe in life, like we're protecting life by not letting you do this thing. And honestly, they're both valid points. I would say that some people think they're protecting the lives of babies, and like that's important, right? Actually, some people feel like, no, we're protecting the lives of the mothers and the women, and that's also right, and that's important. So they both have valid points. What bothers me is that because the protection was taken away, right away, many states started banning abortions in the whole state and even criminalizing it.
I just saw the map, and it's quite shocking, actually, how many are in a black zone, and sort of it's all mapped out now on the internet. Yeah.
And what bothers me about that is that people are losing their ability to choose, right? That there is now one side who is saying, you are not allowed to do something because we don't believe in it. And that's when I become upset, because what pro-choice is that you can choose. If you don't want to have an abortion, you don't have to have one in a pro-choice world. You are free to make your own choices. Mm-hmm. And this is what bothers me with fundamentalism in general, in religion, in spirituality, and just human thinking, the rigidity of human concepts and thoughts and minds. It believes that it has an absolute understanding and there's no space for anything else. And it wants its understanding to be the understanding. It's kind of the ultimate contraction of the ego. And that it thinks that it is God. It knows the truth, and this is the truth, and it wants everything to be that same truth. And we see this in religious wars across the world since forever. We see this in battling ideas, that this is just how human minds work in all these different ways. So in this sense, it's playing out in the issue of abortion. It's going to move to another issue after that and continue to move and move and move. And I personally, my belief is that we need to allow people to follow their choices and their paths and their understandings. And we need to allow points of view that are different than our own. You know, we have to agree to disagree. And if you look at, you know, the prayer flags, or you look at a rainbow, there's all these different colors. There's all these different vibrations, right? All the vibrations are great. They're all necessary. We don't need a garden that's only strawberries. You want a garden that has all the different kinds of fruit, because they're all beautiful and delicious, and like they're great in their own ways, right?
You know, so, it's also Pride Month still, right? I mean, we are recording this interview now in June. It's still the Pride Month, so which is also the rainbow. And you were just,
yeah. So, you know, I guess all of this is just my way of saying, my prayer and my wish is that, you know, we collectively as humans, we move more towards an inclusivity of difference, that we allow differences and we understand them, and we don't need to feel threatened by things that are different than us. And we don't need to feel like our reality is any less valid. And if we do feel that, you know, if I feel like I need to destroy everybody that thinks differently than mine, that means on a subconscious level, I'm aware of how fragile my reality or my truth is. So how true is it if it's that fragile, you know? So I think just the point is that, you know, we have so much to gain from allowing everybody to be their own kind of freaky self, and you know, that for everyone to really just be a full expression. When you go to like a festival, you go to Burning Man, you go to a place where everyone is just dressed in their own expression and acting fun, and everyone's just in their own expression. It's so fun and freeing and beautiful. And we're all so different, but we all come together as this one beautiful energy. And I really would love to see more of that in the world. And this whole like forcing other people to be like we are, so we feel like more comfortable with things, or that what, like that's the past. I think that energy is not going to continue on forever. I don't think it can. I think for evolution, something in that binary black and white, yes, no, right, wrong thinking and way of being is going to have to fall apart and die. Because it's a trauma response. It's not conducive to growth. It's actually not connected to reality, to nature. In nature, there is no right and wrong. You go in the forest, things just are. Everything that's there is. The tree is the tree, and
the tiger
is the tiger, and everything is just its thing, doing its thing. Just like Seth is Seth doing Seth's thing. And, you know, and so every person is just being them, like a rabbit's being a rabbit, or a thing's being, you know, a rock is being a rock. So, you know, trying to control all of the rabbits to be more like tigers or trying to get the trees to be more like rocks, it doesn't make any sense. Everything belongs, you know, and it's an interesting thing that we do that has historically never worked. Never, yes. Really.
I just wanted to say exactly that, which, I mean, of course, I mean, I love the idea, and I feel that we all feel around the world like this. I mean, you're in LA right now, I'm in Singapore, right? We have the whole world between us at the moment. Mm. And it's exactly the same in Asia, and I feel like in other countries where I know people who teach and I have friends. So it seems to be now like the collective mood that we are all like want to move in this direction, create this collective Buddha, and no one knows how to do it exactly. So yeah, we're all experimenting.
Yeah. I mean, look, like I've been to 30 countries, you know, so that's not all of them. There's a lot more to see in this world. I have met beautiful, amazing, friendly, loving people everywhere that I've gone, right? The majority, there's 8 billion people on this earth. The majority of them are good people. The majority, the vast majority are good people. They're people that are loving. They're people that are trying to be happy. They're people that are trying to support themselves and their families. They're people that want to be healthy. Everybody actually... you know, that I'm meeting, they want to do the thing. They want a good world. They want to live in a good world. They just don't know how.
Exactly.
And turning to authorities, religious authorities, political authorities, people that, again, historically and currently, it actually creates most of the problems is when we look for answers from the people who have the most to gain by not giving us the answers, but by giving us self-serving answers that allow them to stay in their positions of power and allow things, their belief systems to stay in place. You know, and I'm working in a treatment center, and, you know, there's people, there's medication that comes in there. And I'm every day looking at the pharmaceutical industry and
the benefits from all of that, of course.
You know, and I'm really seeing just all of the, and I used to work in the school systems back in Boston. And so I've really gotten into a lot of these different, you know, systems in our world, in our society. And I see the disconnect, and I see the brokenness, and I see that they're not sustainable and they're not really forward leading the way that we need it to be. And simultaneously, there's a lot of brilliant people in the world right now that are just doing the thing, that are just creating the new world. There's just people going down to South America and just building new communities. There are people that are just getting into biohacking. There are people that are just taking it upon themselves to become the authorities, to do the new research. And it's like the new earth is birthing from within the old one. And it's data driven as well. It's not like you know, it's not woo. It's real experimental, data driven, important stuff that's combining old technologies with new ones. And I actually, you know, I have a lot of hope for the world because I see people just empowering themselves to do it. And with the internet specifically, you know, it's all these things could be tools for good and evil, right? It's that this could all be used as a tool to control more and to suppress and oppress more and to continue giving the same vibration. And this is also a tool to share ideas. And it's just going to keep happening. There will always be channels where ideas are coming through and that people are figuring things out. The Buddha said that, you know, if you bring a light into a room, no matter how long that room has been in the darkness, you will light up that room. And he said, the truth is like this, that if you bring the truth into the world, no matter how long the world has resided in darkness, if you bring in the truth, everything's going to light up because the truth is the truth regardless. It can never, even if everyone's forgotten the truth still exists. And the truth is still there waiting to be rediscovered. And it'll again come in at some point, you know? So.
Oh, I love it so much.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's really also, you know, where are we putting our focus and understanding what it is and how things are and that not everyone is ready. And, you know, we are in a time of change and there's a lot of systems that are very entrenched. They've been thousands of years locked down, and, you know, and they're going to be there, and there's going to be people clinging on to that stuff for dear life because it's all that they know and it's how they feel safe and empowered. And so, you know, I do my best to not fight anybody, even though I feel sometimes I really want to, but I instead really try just to focus on, well, what is the world that I want to see? What is it that I want to create? Who do I see that is doing that? How do I connect to them? How do we become a web? How do we create a network of like-minded people? And there's a lot of us. There's a lot of us. You know, a lot of really brilliant, powerful, amazing humans that are connecting and doing it right under the surface. You know, creating the new thing right under the surface. And even at the treatment center I'm at, which is like a clinical setting, right? We have a sound healer come in and we have meditation on the schedule. And one of our, you know, overnight staff who's supposed to be security is doing tarot cards with the clients. And, you know, it's just, it's infiltrating from all sides, even in what seems to be the most sterile, removed environments, it's still flowing in there. So, you know, I really try to look at it and say that, you know, it is hopeless. It's hopeless that we have no hope for it to go back to the way that it was. We have no hope for this all to remain in darkness. It's hopeless. We might as well just give up and go with the flow, which is happening towards evolution, towards seeing things more clearly, towards connection, towards health, towards clarity, towards love. It can't be stopped. It can't be stopped. And to really feel that in your nervous system, that it is happening and there's nothing anybody can do about it. So there's really nothing to be afraid of. And don't give your attention to the bullshit. Don't give your attention to the fear. Don't give your attention to those who are getting louder and louder and louder and louder to try to get their voices heard because they're afraid. Really just know that it is happening no matter what. We are waking up together. It is happening. Even if it doesn't seem like it on the surface, it's just a collective purge. It's just bringing all of that stuff up to the surface to be talked about, to be looked at, to be seen, to be worked with. You know, and this is the vibration. This is the understanding that I choose to hold because it's the most empowering and it's the way that we create the future by becoming the vibration of the thing we want to see right now. I become the vibration now. And so it is happening because I'm becoming it. And now I am an anchor for that vibration on this planet. And it is here and it'll just keep spreading. And there's nothing anyone can do about it because it's now here.
And with these incredibly beautiful words and highly inspirational, we somehow came to 1 hour conversation, Seth. How did you make it? And I feel we are just getting started. So probably we're going to have part two at some point. And for everyone else, of course, we will give all the links for you to connect with Seth. Please do that. And also talk to us. Like when you listen, when you watch, if something comes up for you, you want to share your story, you want to reach out, you have an idea how to do something, which we maybe missed. So please talk to us, share in comments, you know, send messages, start conversation on social media. I love like how it says, how you shared. It feels that we kind of all intuitively, collectively know that we're birthing something new, but because it is something new, there is no clear structure yet. So everyone sort of tries to figure out how to create it. And so it, just as you said, everyone is welcomed and it's important to have this inclusivity with views and experiences. So Seth, thank you so much. It was really a pleasure to be with you.
Thank you. A pleasure to be here. Thank you everybody for listening. I know that our time on this life is so precious. So thank you for sharing it with us here and receiving this information.
A gentle reminder that this is not a regular podcast. because here we have no rules and no scripted questions. All conversations are spontaneous, unfiltered, and real with people from all over the world, regardless of their race, religion, nationality, skin color, language, or social circumstances. The intention for this podcast is to showcase the infinite variety of how human beings think and what they do to create happiness, fulfillment, self-realization, health, wealth, legacy, and overall, a truly spectacular life. Did you enjoy the interview? Feel free to share this episode with friends, subscribe to the podcast and YouTube channel, and follow us on social media. And remember, you are the master of your own life.